Hello, Eagles fans, and welcome to Eagles 360 here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Alongside Chris McPherson, I'm Bo Wolfen. Just a couple days into this regular season in 2014, the Eagles already find themselves alone atop the NFC East, Chris. All three of the other teams in the division stunk it up in week one. They're all 0-1. The Eagles already a game up.
Yes, the Eagles all alone there at the top. The New York Giants last night losing 35-14 at the hands of the Detroit Lions. Calvin Johnson was unstoppable. Washington fell 17-6. They did score a touchdown, but the extra point was blocked. Last but not least, the Dallas Cowboys fell behind 21-3 in the first quarter. I thought it was going to be much worse than the final score would indicate. It was only a 28-17 loss at the hands of the San Francisco 49ers. But nonetheless, the Philadelphia Eagles are once again atop the NFC East, and it's only after week one of the regular season.
I had a lot of fun watching that Giants game last night. Eli Manning on pace for 32 interceptions this season, breaking his own record.
27 a year ago, 32 this year. Yeah, certainly Ben McAdoo, the new offense, just not clicking yet with the New York Giants. And hopefully, for Eagles fans, it stays that way throughout the course of the season.
And obviously, we're having a little bit of fun here. But business begins again on Wednesday as the Eagles get back to work preparing for Monday night's opponent, the Indianapolis Colts. The Eagles on primetime football on ESPN. We will preview that matchup on the other side right here on Eagles 360.
Section 512, row 6, seats 7 through 10. Those are our seats.
At this one time we can't be there, please treat them right.
To get there early, stay late, and yell a whole lot.
Dress warm, gloves, hats, warm boots.
Eric sits in the middle. Uncle Paul sits on the aisle.
And if you want to sit in my seat, make sure you get your ticket from the only place a fan can trust.
Buy and sell 100% verified authentic tickets with other true fans. Only on NFL Ticket Exchange. Tickets from one fan to another.
At Lincoln Financial, we believe you're the boss of your life, the chief life officer, in charge of creating memories, planning futures, and keeping promises. Ask your financial advisor how Lincoln Financial can help you take charge of your future. Life, income, retirement, group benefits, and advice. Lincoln Financial, you're in charge.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Everybody knows that.
Well, did you know the Great Wall of China wasn't always so great?
What should we do?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Bo Wolf and Chris McPherson back here on Eagles 360. And it's time now, Chris, to talk about this matchup that we're going to talk about all week, of course, the Eagles and the Colts. Game two of the regular season, prime time on Monday Night Football in Indianapolis. And let's start with a pair of quarterbacks who were both draft classmates just a couple years ago in 2012. The number one overall pick, Andrew Luck, and the guy who the Eagles found in the third round, Nick Foles.
Yes, we'll start with Andrew Luck, the number one overall pick, as you said, Bo. Came into the league and instantly transformed the Colts franchise. Took them from a two-win team to 11 wins in the playoffs. Took them back to the playoffs once again, winning the AFC South again. Tremendous arm talent, underrated athleticism. He really has re-energized that offense. And the one thing that you saw, even in the loss Sunday to the Denver Broncos on Sunday Night Football in prime time, is that Colts are never out of the football game, much like the Philadelphia Eagles. A very explosive offense with Luck at the helm. He's able to bring teams back, as you saw in that playoff win over the Kansas City Chiefs last year, the second biggest in NFL playoff history, bringing back from a 28-point deficit in the second half. So certainly Luck at the controls of this offense. It's going to be a fun matchup and a big challenge for this Eagles defense, which is very good against Jacksonville. But certainly, Andrew Luck, a much better caliber quarterback than Chad Henne.
Now, Luck and Foles both sort of struggled in the first half of last week's game. We know what Nick did in the second half, and we know what Foles did in the second half. But Nick, of course, 27-45 for 322 yards, two touchdowns, the one interception, of course, the two fumbles lost as well. Andrew Luck, for all that he does, he turns the ball over as well. He had two interceptions. But as for Nick Foles, do you expect that we will see early struggles again like we did against the Jaguars, or do you think he'll be in his prime form once the game starts?
Well, I think if you ask most Eagles fans after watching that first half against Jacksonville Jaguars. If you go back to last season when Nick Foles had his worst game of his career against the Dallas Cowboys, what did he do in his next outing? He bounced back with a 7-touchdown performance against the Oakland Raiders. So Eagles fans are hoping maybe you'll see the same magic once again. But let's face it, this Colts defense is not quite up to the caliber of what Jacksonville presented to Nick Foles and the Eagles. You look at what the Colts defense was able to do. They surrendered 361 total yards, 259 through the air. They were only able to get one sack. And I think one of the big questions here is, where is that pass rush coming from with Robert Mathis, who was already suspended for the first four games of the regular season, reportedly out now for the entire season after rupturing his Achilles tendon. You have former first-round pick Bjorn Werner on the outside bringing some of the rush. It's another 3-4 alignment that the Eagles are going to be seeing this week after last week seeing that 4-3 under, which Jacksonville presents. But really, the biggest thing is you don't know where the pass rush is coming from. You have some good pieces in the secondary. Leron Landry is there at safety. Vontae Davis, a very good cornerback. But again, it's just overall not quite up to the caliber you saw what Peyton Manning do on Sunday night against them. What is Nick Foles going to do? I think he's going to be much more efficient. You saw what he's capable of doing in the second half. Just really needed to get his feet under him after that first half performance. He got that out of the way, so hopefully he'll bounce back in a big way, especially going against someone with the likes of Luck, where he wants to be able to showcase himself, saying, look, I was the third-round pick. You were the number one overall pick. I want to showcase why I should be the franchise quarterback.
And obviously Julius Thomas had so much success against that Colts defense. Hopefully that means that there's opportunity for Zach Ertz to be a big factor on Monday night. Obviously at running back, you give the edge to the Eagles, LeSean McCoy, if not the best 1A in terms of best running backs in the league. He was 21 of 74 against the Jaguars, also had 41 receiving yards, and that's a bad day for him, obviously. And, of course, the Eagles also have Darren Sproles now in the backfield, who had his 49-yard touchdown run. For the Colts, it's Ahmad Bradshaw, the old guy, and Trent Richardson, the guy they gave up a first-round pick for. Richardson, only 6 carries for 20 yards against the Broncos. It seems like they don't have a lot of faith in Trent Richardson.
Well, they used a first-round pick to acquire him last year, the former number 3 overall pick. In fact, the Eagles, they're quite familiar with Richardson because they saw him make his NFL debut a couple years ago when he was with the Cleveland Browns. Everyone remembers that big hit he had against Kirk Coleman to send the helmet flying, but Trent Richardson has just not been able to find his way in the NFL. They thought with the offense, the scheme that the Colts run, that might be a better fit, but it just not clicked for him, and that's why Ahmad Bradshaw at many times has looked like the better option out of the backfield there for the Colts. Colts really relying on the passing game, on the arm of Luck, more than anything else. So certainly when you compare the running backs in this matchup, LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles certainly much better in the backfield as options, not just in the rushing game, as well as in the receiving game for the Eagles as compared to what the Colts
have. In the Colts passing game, Luck's main guy is Reggie Wayne, who is obviously very different from the kinds of receivers the Eagles faced last week, a bunch of rookies. Reggie Wayne, as active and as veteran a receiver as you're going to see, also a very big body. He's going to be a tough cover for the guys in the Eagles defense. And then for the Eagles, of course, the top target, Jeremy Maclin, who made his impression felt in his first game back.
Reggie Wayne was selected in the 2001 NFL draft. Is that right? I can't believe that he was a first round pick way back when, but he came off a knee injury of his own last year. Looks very good. They also have T.Y. Hilton, an explosive option for the Colts, and Hakeem Nicks. Look, Eagles are certainly familiar with him from his days with the Giants, even though he does not look like the dominant receiver he used to be. But Reggie Wayne is the one who makes that offense go. He is the guy that Andrew Luck is looking for when he's looking for a security blanket there. So trusty, reliable, Reggie Wayne is certainly the one you have to stop. But overall, because of the lack of faith in the running game, the receivers are the ones that you have to shut down with him, T.Y. Hilton, and Akeem Nicks.
And you talked plenty about the Colts defense, so let's just focus on the Eagles defense here. What do you expect from them bouncing back from 14 points allowed in the first quarter against the Jaguars and then basically putting the clamps down on? I thought it was a very impressive performance for the Eagles defense.
As you said, Bo, Nick Foles and Eagles offense are going to have a lesser challenge on paper compared to last week at Jacksonville. It's going to be a tougher challenge for the Eagles defense, but they certainly stepped up to the task, especially when they had to, shutting out the Jaguars in the second half. In fact, scoring a touchdown with that sack and a fumble recovery by Fletcher Cox, who ran it for 17 yards for the touchdown late in the game to seal the win. But Andrew Luck, so tough to get a hold of, very elusive in the pocket, is not afraid to be able to keep his eyes down the field, to be able to keep those eyes on those targets, to try to get the ball in the hands of his playmakers. And that trio of receivers there, again, like you said, Bo, much better than what the Eagles had to face with Jacksonville last week. So it's going to be a much bigger challenge, especially going on the road in prime time. Many people think that the Colts can come out of not just the AFC South, but of the AFC and possibly play in the Super Bowl this season, or at least they'll be in contention. So certainly a much bigger litmus test. But the Eagles' defense passing grade in week one was certainly a bigger test ahead here.
All right, well, that's your first look at the Eagles' week two opponent, the Indianapolis Colts. On the other side, we'll talk a little fantasy football, and then later in the show, you don't want to miss Chip Kelly right here exclusively on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Sweat. It says I was here. I worked here. It says I only have so much to give before I have to take. What I lose, I want to get back. Sweat says I earned this. Gatorade, created to help replace what you sweat out.
The moment we dare to imagine is the moment progress begins. In a flash, the inconceivable becomes everyday. Imagine someone doing the same for healthcare. At Jefferson, we've brought together some of the brightest minds in medicine, in research and innovation, resulting in advancements that will touch lives in amazing ways. You might not see how a health sciences university, an academic medical center, and spectacular collisions of imagination can change your future, but you will.
For a limited time, stop by your local McDonald's and go for two with your favorite large soft drink in an Eagles Players Cup and large shaken flavor fries, including flavors of Zesty Ranch, Spicy Buffalo, and Garlic Parmesan for only $3.49. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Price and participation may vary while supplies last. Tight end Zach Ertz had three catches, all of them for more than 20 yards in Sunday's win over Jacksonville, including a 25-yard touchdown from Nick Foles in the third quarter. Should he be in your fantasy lineup moving forward? Bo Wolf and Joe Dolan tell you more in this week's Fantasy Spin.
Well, hopefully a successful week one for you fantasy-wise. It's time now to talk about week two as we go inside the Fantasy Spin with Joe Dolan from FantasyGuru.com. Of course, I'm Bo Wolf. And Joe, let's talk about this Eagles offense. Obviously, a struggle early against a pretty good Jaguars defense. Nick Foles and the offense turned things around in the second half. How do you feel about Foles? Obviously, he struggled, but he still put up numbers.
I think that's the key aspect of this offense. I'm sure Nick Foles, if you were in the tape room with him watching the review of this game, I'm sure he would have told you he should have thrown for 450 yards in this game. Instead, he went for about 320 and two touchdowns. This is what this offense is going to do, though. Nick Foles probably would tell you, hey, I didn't play very well in this game, and he still threw for 320 yards, two touchdowns. If he plays better, maybe he goes for 400. That's just the upside that this offense has, and that's why I love having Nick Foles for fantasy, because even if he doesn't have his best game, he's going to be able to put up big numbers each and every week. That's what having this offense, this play calling staff, and these weapons is going to be able to do for him. So Nick Foles, until proven otherwise, is a weekly fantasy starter at quarterback.
And obviously, if you have Foles, you're starting him this week against the Colts defense that gave up 31 points to the Denver Broncos. And one of the areas where that Colts defense was able to be exploited was at tight end, where Julius Thomas had three touchdowns, a bunch of yards, single-handedly cost me my first week one matchup against Chris McPherson. Still will not forgive them for that, but hopefully that means that Zach Ertz is the guy who can take advantage this week.
Well, I'm hoping DeQuell Jackson takes some Z-Quil this week, because he's going to need to sleep a little bit better, because he's having nightmares of Julius Thomas, and he's probably having nightmares just thinking about Zach Ertz and what he could do to him defensively. Look, Zach Ertz didn't have a whole lot of high volume in this game against the Jaguars. Only five targets. He played only 60% of the snaps. That's why I'm a little concerned about him as a weekly starter at the tight end position. but it's evident he can be so efficient. He's one of the best route runners at his position in the entire NFL. He might be, outside of Jeremy Maclin, the best field stretcher on the Eagles team. So this is a guy that can take the ball in the short area and turn it into a big gain, or he can simply run a deep route and turn it into a big gain. So Zach Ertz, because of his upside, I'm totally cool with him starting each and every week in my lineup, but understand that because of the wealth of weapons the Eagles have, there's going to be some disappointment here and there, I think.
All three catches for Ertz against the Jaguars came for over 25 yards, including that one touchdown. All right, let's look around the league. And, of course, one of the most dreaded phrases you'll hear in fantasy is a running back by committee. We have one down in Miami. Who's the guy to own? No Sean Moreno or Lamar Miller?
Can I be wishy-washy on this? I would say no Sean Moreno for right now, but it looks like they might actually have two viable fantasy backs. And look what a creative offensive coordinator can do for you. Bill Lazor, who came from the Chip Kelly school, he knows how to utilize the run game and create explosive plays out of it. The Dolphins had zero fantasy-relevant fantasy backs this year. I think they'll have two this year. I was a little bit surprised by the play breakdown, to be completely honest with you. Lamar Miller was the guy who got the pass targets, not no Sean Moreno. And I thought Moreno, his impact could have been made on third down and in the passing game. Instead, he got more than 20 carries. He ran for 130 yards. He ran really hard. I still think Miller is a more explosive back. But No. Sean Moreno runs really hard. They like him around the goal line. If I had to pick one guy to have on my team, it's going to be No. Sean Moreno. But Lamar Miller proved, and Bill Lazor proved with the way both of the backs were utilized, that both of these guys can have some fantasy value.
Interesting matchup for the Dolphins this week. Interdivision as they go up to Buffalo and staying within that AFC East. We've also got to talk about Chris Johnson and Chris Ivory, who were both productive for the Jets, but CJ2K was the guy who was really the bell cow for the Jets. Is he a player who maybe is in for a bounce-back season?
This is going to be a little bit weird for Chris Johnson because he's not going to have volume for the first time in his entire NFL career. But in terms of being an NFL player, I think this is actually going to make him more effective. I think he's needed to be kind of a rotational player that they haven't had the opportunity to make him in Tennessee. But this year in Marty Morningwig's offense, he's going to rotate with Chris Ivory, and I think it's going to help keep Chris Johnson a little bit fresher. He might not have the RB2 value that he had in his time with Tennessee, but I think he's going to have decent flex value, especially if you're in a PPR league. They've needed to get him the ball on the perimeter for years. Tennessee really didn't figure out how to do it. But the Jets seem to have done it, and after 1 week, I'm cool with starting Chris Johnson as my flex.
And they've got a matchup against a Packers run defense that was pretty leaky against the Seahawks. Of course, Marshawn Lynch is pretty good himself.
Yes,
all right,
he is.
Big picture-wise, a little bit quicker. Let's talk about some guys to sell high on and buy low on after week one.
I think I might sell high on Anquan Boldin, and I've doubted Anquan Boldin in the past, and he's proved me wrong. I doubted him before he went to San Fran last year, and he had one of his best years, the best year he's had, frankly, since he left the Arizona Cardinals. But after a huge game against the Dallas Cowboys in week one, one thing I want to be wary of, the 49ers really didn't run a whole lot of offensive plays in this game. They didn't really need to because they had such a big lead early, and I think that really limited the impact of Michael Crabtree, who came into the game with a calf injury. They didn't need to test out Crabtree. They didn't need to run a risk of aggravation. And ultimately, I think Crabtree and Vernon Davis, those are going to be the two guys to go to here, not Anquan Boldin. I would try to capitalize on Bolden's name value and sell him high. Now, if I want to buy somebody low, I'd go after Eddie Lacy of the Green Bay Packers. And I understand that the concussion is a huge concern. It's his second in a year. But he did come off of a concussion last year, ran like an animal after it. And I'm never going to hold facing Seattle on the road at night against a fantasy back. This is a rare opportunity, Bo, to get you a fantasy stud on your team for a cheaper price than he was available for a week ago.
All right, well, that does it for this week's Fantasy Spin. As always, Joe Dolan takes us through everything you need to know ahead of your matchups. Follow him on Twitter at @FG_Dolan, and we'll see you next week right here on the Fantasy Spin.
It's time for Dave Spadaro's exclusive one-on-one interview with head coach Chip Kelly. But first, this commercial break here on Eagles 360. We'll be right back.
The tournament is there. You're here. And before you take the team's star midfielder from here to there, along with his entourage, you have some things to do, like finding a place to stay, getting an oil change, mapping out the best route. Yes. Are we there yet? No. Roadside assistance? Not today, but always on call. So wherever your journey takes you, AAA helps you get there. So everyone's a winner. Start your journey at AAA.com.
Hi, my name is Jim Taylor. I've been with Acme for 34 years. Our Lancaster brand beef is the best around. We cut our meat fresh every day. We actually have customers come from other stores just for our meat.
Freshness is our number one priority. No one beats our fresh fish.
We have the freshest apples, the Christie's lettuce. Fresh produce is what we do.
We do the best cake decorating in the area, hands down.
123 years strong. Come on in. You'll see the changes. You'll feel it. You'll love it.
We welcome you into the studio. Dave Spadaro joined by head coach Chip Kelly, our exclusive one-on-one interview. The Eagles coming off a big win on Sunday against Jacksonville. Now it's a Monday night game in Indianapolis against the Colts. Congratulations on the win, coach. And you said after the game, it was interesting that your message to the team was that everybody on the roster, every single guy, is going to be needed. Can you kind of just talk about how the whole roster, how you take that into account and make sure that everybody knows that they're going to be used?
I think the unique thing about the National Football League is that there's only 46 guys that are eligible to play on game day. You know, you have to give your inactive list to the league. 53 make the squad. You have another 10 players on the practice squad, but you only have 46 when you line up on game day. So there's not a lot of bodies out there. And with everything that goes on, the game's still not shorter. You know, at college, you used to having, you had a home game, everybody dressed. So you had 100 guys at your disposal, and you could handle injuries, and you had people that had practiced. So, you know, specifically by position, we had 7 offensive linemen dressed for the game. We lost 2 offensive linemen in the first half against the Jaguars, and your 2 backups are in the game. You don't have another backup. You know, our next maneuver was to move Brent Celek into the offensive line if we were to sustain, even if it was just a broken helmet for a play, you had to get through it. So it's everybody that dresses for the game has to prepare like they're the starter, because there's an opportunity that everybody's going to play. And then everybody except for, you hope that the 3 guys don't play as your backup quarterback because we dressed 2, and your backup lineman because you're sustained injuries. Besides that, everybody else is getting on the field. Trey Burton dressed, would have been our 3rd running back, was also our 4th tight end, played a lot of special teams. So everybody gets special teams reps and got to contribute to the victory.
You got to make sure everybody's ready and prepared for every scenario, don't you?
Exactly. And it's tough at times from a practice standpoint because they're not going to get a whole lot of reps in practice because you know, you just don't have that many to go around, or you're going to run your team into the ground on the practice field. So they've got to really spend a lot of time from a mental standpoint and be prepared if their opportunity comes, if they take advantage of it. And I thought the guys that were called upon to play some positions that they haven't normally really practiced at did a really good job.
Coach, you've got some banged up bodies up front. Team comes back to work tomorrow. How do you get everybody ready, gelled, continuity in place for Monday night?
I think one of the byproducts of how we train as a team is our 2s and 3s get a ton of reps. So if we have an injury at a position, it's not like the first time someone like Andrew Gardner's got to go in and play football for us. You know, he played a ton. One of the strengths, I think, of our football team was our offensive line in the preseason. I think our 2nd offensive line did an outstanding job all preseason and all 4 preseason games. So those guys got their fair share of reps because of how we train on the practice field, but also in the preseason game. So when you do have some injuries like that, you're not putting someone in that hadn't, that guy hasn't really gotten a lot of snaps. I think because of how many reps we run, which is a little bit different than some of the other NFL franchises, our guys are a little bit more game ready when that opportunity comes for them.
With Mulk at left guard, how much does Jason Kelce help him and Jason Peters help him and get him in a position where he could have success at left guard?
I think everybody helps him. You know, you're always going to take care of the guy. There's a lot of combo blocks that go on between the center and the left guard, or the left guard and the left tackle. So they're always talking anyways. And Dave predominantly trained at center, so he understands what the guards do on either side of him because he worked with them on every play when he was in there. So, but it is a credit to him in terms of him being able to be as successful as he was with not getting a ton of reps. Most of his reps came in the preseason as a center. So to get thrown in there at left guard, I thought he did a really nice job for us.
Nick Foles had some ups and downs in the first half of that game. He bounced back, had a beautiful second half. What's it say about
him to stay focused and to come back with that kind of performance?
I think it says a lot about him as a player, and I think obviously things don't go the way people always want it scripted, you know, whether it be us or the fans or him individually. You know, no one planned on us being down 17-0 at halftime. That was as much a surprise to our fans as it was to us, to be honest with you. But, you know, I think the way the whole group stuck together and looked at it as, hey, we got to just stick together as a team, and you know, we're only a couple possessions away from it. And just play it as one possession to the next possession, as opposed to, hey, we're playing a whole game here, and really focused and concentrated on that, you know, in terms of going in there at halftime and talking to the guys and then coming back out. And I think our guys showed that in the second half in terms of really staying together as a team and playing as a team.
Nick's one of those guys who always accepts responsibility, passes along the credit when things go well, accepts responsibility on himself when things don't go quite as well. What's it mean to have that kind of player who's such a harsh critic of himself as your quarterback?
Well, I think it's unique in today's society that someone acts like that. I shouldn't say act, because that is him. He's not like that as an individual. I think he really plays football for his teammates, and I don't think he's ever been in it for the individual glory. He's kind of unique from that standpoint, and he's just got a great mindset. And I think, you know, for some people he comes off as, you know, he's just saying that. And that's not. That's Nick. That's the way Nick's all about, and I think that's why he's such a great teammate. And he understands playing quarterback. You have to shoulder a lot of the burden, and that – you know, that comes with the nature of the position. And then also, if he does have success, it's because people are blocking for him well up front. Receivers are doing a great job of getting open. You know, our backs are so integral in what we do from a running standpoint that when we do throw a play-action pass, people are going to step up and honor the run fake because of how good a run game we have. So there's a lot of things that contribute to our success. But, you know, to have a guy that's totally selfless at that position, it's somewhat unique. But it's a great message to everybody on this team.
On the defensive side of the ball, I watched the game. Everybody watched the game. And Connor Barwin was all over the field. And then I looked at the stats and two tackles, a pass knocked down, a pass defense. It seemed like he made a huge impact. What did you see from him?
He does. And I think at times people get lost in that this isn't fantasy football. This is reality football. And I think the guys that do an unbelievable job of Connor Barwin is like that. There's games where, you know, one of our MVPs of the defense the other day was Benny Logan. He played an outstanding job controlling the middle of the line of scrimmage and allowing both of our linebackers to run clean. A lot of those things don't show up on the stats. You know, there's times when corners play an unbelievable game and they don't have the stats that some other corners have because the ball's not thrown their way. You know, so it's, well, this guy leads your team in interceptions. Well, the other guy doesn't get the ball thrown his way. That means he's doing a heck of a job and the ball's going in different directions. So we got a bunch of unselfish guys again on defense. Connor's one of those really good leaders over there that really, at the end of the day, all those guys that were in that locker room were concerned about was winning. They weren't concerned about individual accolades or individual glory, and I think that tells you that we're really moving towards a truly a team mentality. But when your leaders act like that, it's very easy for everybody else to follow in line.
Brandon Graham seems to have come a long way making the transition to this defense. What have you seen from him since you got here?
Yeah, BG, another guy that I thought really stepped up. A guy that maybe some people had written off, you know, fortunately we didn't. I think there's a spot and a role for him in what we do. I think he's a dynamic player in terms of his ability to rush the passer and set the edge, you know, in the run game. And he's a physical player at the point of attack. And, you know, we got to see that. And then when you can kind of sprinkle him in there with Trent Cole, who had an outstanding offseason, another guy played a great game for us on Sunday. But to be able to take Trent out of the game for X amount of snaps and bring in a Brandon Graham, and there's not a drop-off. You know, we're going to play a lot. That's the same concept we have, is we're going to play a lot of guys on defense if we can, and if the situation dictates it. And, you know, you don't have to change your calls when Brandon's in there as opposed to Trent, or if Brandon was in there for Connor. We got Connor out for a few snaps just to make sure that we were rolling fresh bodies and there was a hot day. So I'm really happy with how BG worked in the offseason, how he went through preseason camp, and how he really played in this first game.
The Colts are the opponent on Monday night. All that conversation starts with Andrew Luck. I mean, what do you see from him? How good is he?
Andrew's a special player, an opportunity to compete against him in college. Mm-hmm. And he's everything as advertised. You know, I think the one thing that he separates himself from a lot of other quarterbacks in this league, he has the size, he has the intelligence, he has the arm strength, he can make every throw, but he can legitimately run the football. You know, he ran 4.65 at the combine. He was the second fastest or third fastest quarterback at the combine. If you aren't in your proper rush lanes, or if you do a great job in coverage and there's an opportunity from he can take off and go. He can run it in from a pretty far distance, and I think that's the unique quality that he has that maybe separates him from some of the other real good, strong, physical pocket passers in this league, is that he can take the ball down and run it. And so you got to be really concerned with that. He's got some toughness to him. You know, his stats after 2 years in the league, the most yards ever thrown for, the most fourth quarter comebacks. He's as intelligent as you get at that position. Another guy you admire as a coach just because of how selfless he is and what a great leader he is by example. So we're going to have our hands full with Andrew.
And he's got Reggie Wayne and T.Y. Hilton and Hakeem Nicks and two tight ends that are really good. How excellent is that group? How much of a challenge is that for defense?
They have weapons, you know, and I think that's the challenge. And I think our – you know, if you're a competitor, you get excited about that. But you do, the receivers that you mentioned, you're throwing Fleener and Allen at the tight ends. They're running the ball better now. You know, I think it's going to be a real tough test for our defense going against that offense. But if you're a competitor, you relish being in these situations.
What kind of things do they do defensively? What do you expect from them?
Chuck came from the old Ravens. You know, they're a big 3-4 team. They're very, very big on the defensive front. They're 340, 337, 318 in their front three. They got two real good outside linebackers. Beyond Warner was first-round draft pick for him. That's really coming into play. I think DeQuell Jackson, who they brought over from Cleveland, has really solidified the linebacker, inside linebacker position for them. Solid on the back end in the secondary play. Probably a little bit more man than the Jaguars played, but a real solid scheme, you know, coming from that Baltimore Ravens tree that had all those great teams in the last couple of years. And you know, and Rex Ryan came from that tree. So a lot of the 3-4 spacing things even a lot of things that Billy Davis does in our defense. So it's going to be a challenge. Really just matching up with their size is the biggest challenge going into this game.
Well, have a great Tuesday night, a great day of training on Wednesday, and good luck on Monday night, Coach. Thanks so much for joining us in studio here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
SEPTA is the way to get to games.
I love taking the subway down there because I feel like I'm, you know, with all fans. Everybody's got their gear on.
People are chanting and cheering on the train before you even get to the station.
There's a sense of camaraderie because Philly loves their sports teams.
It's really fun. It's Philadelphia.
Hey, Eagles fans!
When the Eagles win,
you win!
Score a free Dunkin' Donuts medium hot or iced coffee the day after an Eagles win with the Dunkin' mobile app.
Eagles win?
You win!
Go Eagles!
America runs on Dunkin'.
Dunkin' Donuts is helping more area youth get in the game through the Touchdowns for Kids program. For every Philadelphia Eagles touchdown, Dunkin' Donuts will donate $250 to Good Sports, bringing new equipment and resources to youth sports organizations in need throughout the greater Philadelphia region.
The moment we dare to imagine is the moment progress begins. In a flash, the inconceivable becomes everyday. Imagine someone doing the same for healthcare. At Jefferson, we've brought together some of the brightest minds in medicine, in research, and innovation, resulting in advancements that will touch lives in amazing ways. You might not see how a health sciences university, an academic medical center, and spectacular collisions of imagination can change your future, but you will.
When I was a little kid, I thought riding SEPTA was just the coolest thing. I thought, I'm on this big piece of metal, blazing down these tracks, there's people ringing bells above me, there's honking going on, there's trees flying by. It's fantastic.
Bo Wolf and Chris McPherson back here on Eagles 360. Good stuff as always from Chip Kelly along with Dave Spadaro. And now we turn the page back a little bit to this week's Old School All-22, which comes to us from Eagles Game Plan. And of course, Fran Duffy has been doing such a good job with those Eagles Eye in the Sky pieces. Check those out on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. But with a Monday Night Football game on tap this week against the Colts, we look back at one of the most iconic Monday Night Football moments in Eagles history. Dan Klecko tells us how Randall Cunningham made such an impressive play.
It's a pitch to Montgomery, 25-30.
Fourth and 26. He is firing, and it is caught by
Cunningham. Oh, the ball goes for a touchdown.
That was pretty much lock it up.
What's up, Eagles fans? I'm Dan Klecko, and I want to welcome you back into the Old School All-22. This week, the Eagles play Under the Lights Monday Night Football, so we thought we'd take a look back. Not only one of the greatest plays in Eagles history, but really NFL history. We're going to look at the old Monday Nighter, the magical play, Randall to Giles, when he evades Carl Banks. You're going to love this play.
It was week six of the 1988 season and the Eagles' first appearance on Monday Night Football in 7 years. The Giants entered the game heavy favorites because most experts thought that their vaunted defense would be too much for Randall Cunningham. Midway through the second quarter, the Eagles driving deep into Giants territory. And on third and goal, Randall came up with one of the signature plays of his career.
Randall faking, now rolling with the football and being flattened at the 10, but throwing the ball to Giles for a touchdown.
All right, so obviously we're going to look at the play here. You get down inside the 5, and the Eagles come in with this heavy package. The Giants are going to match it. And there's two things you can really do on goal line on defense. You either guess run or pass, and either you're going to be real wrong or real right. So right here, as we look at this play, the Giants guess pretty right. They're ready for the pass. They see how deep you are there. We see Giles coming out. He's going to run his 7 route, which every team in the NFL does. That's usually the pattern that everyone's going to run. And Randall rolls out. Obviously, he doesn't have him. Giles gets caught up with the D-back. Randall sees Carl Banks coming. Carl Banks, one of the greatest linebackers in NFL history. But Randall Cunningham showing why he's one of the greatest athletes in this league ever. Finds Giles in the back of the end zone. Eagles win 24-13. That vaunted defense couldn't keep up with Randall. And we see why maybe he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Cunningham was hit at the 10-yard line, and as he was going down, he whistled it to Jimmy Giles in the corner of the end zone.
Thanks for watching Eagles 360, and if you want to relive it all over again, the archive is up right now on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. For Chris McPherson, I'm Bo Wolf. We'll see you tomorrow night on Eagles 360.